Good morning. I see we've got a boycott going on here with the orchestra, huh?
Yes. You know what?
Way to go, Hansel.
You know what?
Your touch is still here.
I can't find the music.
We can create our own music there, Brian.
Oh, man, you don't want to get
that
rumor out that you and I are making music together?
What about a new theme song? You know, maybe we should take a poll. Your next poll should be
bring out a
Talk
kazoo?
Shop. Hey, Talk Shop, should we get a new theme song?
Well, we are let's see, we're February 1. So we are 2 months away from starting year 43.
Okay. So maybe
every 43 years?
Yeah. Maybe the drum beats, maybe those need to go away. Maybe we need to do something else.
Okay, well, me and my musical consultants will get back to you on that one.
Two more Spyro Gyro.
Yeah. Are you ready for your question?
I am.
All right. It is in sports and leisure, so I suppose music is leisure.
Okay.
You have no chance on this one, though. What does it mean to rest on your laurels?
Oh, you got me. Just lay it on me. What is it?
Oh, come on. You can't even get a guess?
I'm not going to
think
guess.
Olympics.
Marathon. Rest on your trophies, on your past practices.
What do they have on their heads?
The wreaths.
The yes. Rulers.
Yeah, okay. Man, the crowns.
You lead a sheriff to water and he still dies of thirst.
Don't rest on your past accomplishments. Always forge ahead, right?
Oh, now we're starting to fake it. Okay.
Okay.
The practice of using laurels to symbolize victory came from the ancient Greeks. After winning on the battlefield, great warriors were crowned with a wreath of laurels, or bay leaves, I guess if they like spaghetti, or bay leaves, to signify their supreme status during a victory parade. Because the first Olympics consisted largely of war games, the champions were honored in much the same manner, with a laurel or crown of leaves. To rest on your laurels means to quit while you're ahead.
Ah, quit while you're ahead. Why wouldn't you quit while you're ahead? Why do you have to get defeated, right?
Because there's always another chapter.
Man.
Well, we got a couple different directions we can go. You want to talk about staffing or you want to talk about the rainstorms?
I like to talk about the 49ers.
Well, I bet your insight's about as much as it is about laurels.
Yes. Hey, either one. We can talk about all of it. So,
well, why don't we talk with the storm to start with, because that's probably higher on more minds of listeners than
for sure
other stuff.
Yes.
With the stuff that happened this past... Okay, my bone to pick.
Please, pick it.
All right. We're getting a ton of information from Ryan out of OES.
Yes.
Great stuff.
Yes.
However, it always seems to be, could be, and then there's the extreme.
Yes.
All right. So we've got either panic and paranoia, because, well, it came from the Sheriff's Department. We trust them.
True.
Well, that wasn't up for debate, but okay, we'll go with that.
No, that is true. It's very true. We trust
or
the Sheriff's Office.
We've got the flip side of that where we're crying wolf, and we didn't have 65-mile-an-hour blows.
Yes.
We didn't get 8.5 inches of rain.
We got a record.
We got less.
Yes.
So then when the real ones come.
Yes.
And we don't worry. How do you balance between too much information, doing the edges so that people can be prepared for it, but then not desensitizing us to the point where you go, yeah.
That is so true.
Dismiss.
We've seen this. We've seen this from the Weather Service from the last couple of years. So what we're doing at the Office of Emergency Services is this information isn't created in our center at the Sheriff's Office. The information is being generated from the National Weather Service by those
it's
experts.
Ryan and Troy and
they are the experts and they have their models and computer models and they're making their best guess on what's going to happen, you know, here on the North Coast. And, you know, with all the projected models and those kind of things, they put in some variables in there. They're doing that now, the percentages. The percentage likely we're going to get 2 to 4 inches is 90%. You know, and they did hit those numbers in several areas. The wind speeds, not so much, you know, because the storm tracked right off of our coast. And so the main part of the storm on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, really just hit west of us. And so we were lucky at that point in time. But what I want to encourage our Office of Emergency Services is to always provide the information that we get, and people can make the determination of what they want to do with that information. We always want to prepare. We always want to make sure that people understand the worst case scenario, what could be coming, so they can make a decision. Now, there is this fatigue from overinformation. There is this fatigue that we get, and also sometimes that cry wolf.
Updates a week.
Yeah, it is.
Boil it down for me.
It is okay. Exactly. And so, but what we want to do is we want to make sure that that people don't get fatigued by getting too much information, or they start ignoring the message. And that's, you know, over the last several years, we understand that. The bomb cyclone that came in last year, it was a lot of hype over that. And then
Then we got new terminology also.
Yes. Atmospheric rivers, you know, all those other things.
We used to call that
a rainstorm.
Yes.
All these, it's, you know, so it's hard not to sensationalize things. It's hard not to do that within the media sources and those kind of stuff.
Yeah, to whip up the fervor and say, you know, this is the latest, greatest.
Yes.
And forgetting about yesterday.
But then on the other hand, we had 3 weeks ago, we had flooding in Arcata. We had all this other stuff, and it was just supposed to be a major storm. And, you know, there was projections about the Mad River, you know, peaking flood stage, but as far as the small creeks and streams, you know, we didn't think they were going to react that much. And so it's hard. So we want to make sure that we do inform the public that there is a potential for this kind of activity. And the people that are around the small creeks, the people that are around the rivers, and that they need to pay attention. But there's always messages. There's always things to learn every time we go through these.
I guess it's intriguing for me. You're not quite as experienced as I am, but, you know, you're getting there.
Okay, thank you. You do have a couple more years.
When we were growing up, normal, regular. Yeah, we'd have floods, and you'd hear about flood stage at Dr. Fine Bridge and at the Mad River Bridge and at Scotia. And it was just, that was part of wintertime. But we weren't building on floodplains, and we didn't have the silt in, and we didn't have a bunch of people who hadn't experienced this stuff before.
Yes, but don't you think in this society now, this day and age, that people want more information? It's like we have tons of information out there.
You think we have over information and we need maybe simplification?
Yes, but this is a more complicated time. So, you know, there's a lot of things we can debate on that, for sure.
I sense that we probably will. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian Coconut Water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's Homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Hey, the band is back. That
Dang
was a
it.
Short labor negotiation.
Dang it.
Thanks. Yeah, it was the fear that the bongo player wasn't going to be part of the game anymore.
I know. I'm anxious to hear the results of the poll that you put out.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. So how do you know how much is too much when it comes to information? Certainly with legal stuff, there's probably more of a black and white line, probably out of the fifth floor. They'll counsel you what to do and what not to do, or you know.
Yeah.
But how do you know how much, you know, whether it's weather related or a live incident going on or anything that's going on? How do you know how far without creating hysteria, paranoia, all that kind of stuff?
It's public information is something that's developed over the last, you know, 30 to 40 years. People want more information. It's the information age where people, you know, want to look up and really decide for themselves, you know, what they believe or not. And so it's my job as the sheriff, as the director of emergency service, is to provide as much information as possible for people to decide what they really want to do. And I want to inform the public, especially when there's any kind of issue with public safety. If there's a public safety issue, a concern where life or property could be damaged or there could be loss of life, then I want to inform the public that there's the possibility of those things. You know, so we have rainstorms coming in that's likely of stream or creek flooding or river flooding, when there's the king tides, whether there's, you know, I want to inform people of being prepared for earthquakes, or there is an active incident, a hostage barricaded subject, an active shooter, potential rapist out there. You know, all those things are things that I want to inform the public of and provide them as much information as possible so they can make an informed decision of whether or not they want to go out, whether they, you know, and to stay away from a certain area because of the likelihood of danger. So it's, but it weighs on me too, that we don't want to provide too much information, and that balance has to be there because we want people to pay attention to the message. If we're ringing that bell every day, then people are going to stop hearing the bell, and we don't want that to happen.
I would think that there's also a recognition that if it's weather and there's this and there's that, and a lot of us kind of go, okay, that's four things, blah, 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 and all of them, doesn't matter what the content is, it's the source.
Right.
Yeah, I'll give you something else from the sheriff, fine, whatever.
Right.
And dismiss all of them. Are there some departments that do, like, daily, here's today's updates?
Crime blotter.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they shoot out, and it's mm-hmm. like 8 o'clock every morning, and that's what goes out, and we'll give you the updates, and if then anything truly extraordinary, okay, then we'll do something different, but make the routine.
You know, during the pandemic, we saw that that's exactly what we needed to do, because the public really was hanging on every piece of information that was coming from locally or Sacramento or the federal government on what was going to happen next. So we were doing daily briefings, daily bulletins, and that was something that the Sheriff's Office, Office of Emergency Services, and our Joint Information Center really focused on. And so in the event of a major incident or major emergency, that is likely what's going to happen. But as we see through all public safety agencies, police, fire, Caltrans, Weather Service, you know, it's all situational based. If we have a situation or an incident or a need to push out information, we're going to do that. We could flood every day people with every day we could talk about things that are happening at the sheriff's office, the crimes that are occurring, the incidents that are happening inside the jail, things that have to do with animal control or death investigations. I mean, every day we could put out several press releases on that. And so we don't do that because we want to put out press releases that are in the public interest, or we need the public's help, or it's the public's need to know, kind of a thing, the right to need to know.
The right to know versus the need to know.
Yes.
Now, there are some folks that are defining things differently, I guess is the night. Well, I don't know why I'm hedging.
Just
the nice way to say it.
Yeah.
And then you've got the conspiracy folks. Okay. So how do you determine what is worthy of a press release or not? I mean, if there's a murder has been committed, okay, some say that's newsworthy. Some say, well, maybe not. Okay. A food strike in the jail because nobody wants carrots anymore. Okay. I mean, is that newsworthy or not? Some people say, I want to know what's going on. Others don't. I mean, how do you balance that? I mean, it's situational, but it's also systemic and cultural.
Well, my philosophy has been get out in front of all these things that could potentially be news stories. And we want to push our message out first, because if you have someone else that's telling your message, then oftentimes the message gets skewed, and that's what the public opinion then is shaped on, is the skewed message. So we want to put out the right, correct message from the very beginning. And sometimes we get criticized because we don't put out enough information, but we have to weigh what's public's right to know versus the integrity of an investigation. And so we have to weigh all those things all the time. In a homicide case, there's a lot of things that we don't actually putting in a press release because it could jeopardize the investigation ultimately. So though the public may know information, though reporters may know information, we don't necessarily want to validate that information because it jeopardizes things.
Yeah, confirmation is same, right? I guess it just kind of makes it the art rather than the science.
Yes, it is. Sure.
Are we ready to hear the music one more time?
I think so.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Don't we love that intro? KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:35.
Just feel like dancing.
Yeah. Billy Hansel's alongside this morning.
Yes.
Budget stuff. Mid-year budget came through? Kind of, sort of.
Not,
you guys got
not yet, but we had an interesting dialogue the other day at the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Yeah, what triggered that one?
Okay, so what happened is this last budget year, we all, the departments, had to take a 10% cut, essentially, because to balance this budget shortfall that we have.
Now, define cut.
Meaning that we had to submit a budget that was 10% less than what we need to run our existing operations. So we did that.
And Not necessarily what was spent.
Right.
What's
our future? Our future? So a budget has to be approved by the Board of Supervisors. Many people don't understand that as an elected official, I don't have a boss. My boss are the people, right? But the Board of Supervisors are responsible for giving me a budget to do my job. And so they hold my budget and they hold potentially my ability to hire people. And so last year,
or to buy gasoline,
or buy gasoline, or to pay my bills, or to run my jail, all those things.
Now, what percentage of your budget is, let's say, influenceable by the Board of Supervisors versus those that are categorical funded, direct funded, or grant funded from other sources?
Well, it's a $55 million budget, and we have about $40 million comes from the general fund. $35 to $40 million comes from the general fund. Everything else is coming in from other sources.
Two-thirds is coming in that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
So last year, 10% cut, and so we had to submit basically $5.5 million additional general fund request to keep existing positions. That's 30-plus positions funded, plus some of our operations going, like the swap yard, and then maintaining our Garberville substation and Willow Creek substation. So those are things that I wanted to maintain, that I pushed forward and say, I need additional funding, or these things are going to get shut down, and these employees are going to have to get laid off.
So the 5.5 represents that 10% that you had been asked to be cut?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so they agreed. They provided that money to me. Actually, I needed $8.5 million, but to keep things going. But I settled for 5.5, and because one of the things that has happened over the last 5 years is they have not given me additional money to support the inflation of certain things within our budget, like food for the jail, like our workman's comp rates, our insurance rates, all those things that continue to go up. I had to absorb within my existing budget, which means I froze my positions so I could pay for these increases, because the county did not provide for me to handle these increases.
So by frozen, for many of us, we can think of the imagery of an empty desk.
An empty desk. So it's like, I'm not hiring this person. The salary that I should be paying this person is going to keep the lights on, so to speak, okay? So they granted me $5.5 million, but then they made this rule that we are going to evaluate every position that comes up to see whether or not, you know, it is essential to keep operations going. So basically, they froze all of my positions, and I have to ask permission to hire someone.
Even
though I have the dollars in my budget. So I have 19 correctional deputy positions that I could, if 19 people showed up, I should be able to hire 19. But I had to go to the board, and now they made a rule. And it was the CAO in the human resources.
I guess
director.
Human rights is, and human resources are both HR, huh?
Pretty much. Oh, so
that's kind of frightening.
Yeah. But that changed, and now I have to go to the board of supervisors to authorize every single position I'm hiring. So I thought, you know what? We have essential positions. Correctional deputies, deputy sheriffs, and dispatchers. Those positions are about 35 positions or so. I want to put those positions in front of the board and say, can you deem that these positions are essential to my operations, and I want permission to hire every person I can possibly hire, because the public expects someone to answer the 911. They expect deputies to be in charge of the jail, and they expect 911 response from deputies.
So and those categories would be not subject to...
to this hiring freeze. Okay. They would say these are essential and that I can hire as many people because I have money in my budget. And Steve Madrone pulled the item, said that he didn't believe that I was cutting enough. And I have already cut 35 positions in my agency. I have frozen 35 additional positions that I'm not funding this year. I've done my part over the years to cut positions. And he told in a public statement that he believes that I should cut more, or I should come in line with a lot of the other departments and make a cuts, and insinuating that I haven't already done that, which is an absolute lie. So here I am, and I have to petition in front of the board, you know, to try and hire what the public expects me to provide, if I'm able to provide that. I had Michelle and Rex immediately want to fund the 35 positions as I requested. But then I had Mike Wilson and Natalie Arroyo question my need for those, and then voice concerns over the budget. And I have concerns over the budget as well. But I also have concerns about providing the services that the public wants. The public wants deputy sheriffs out there. The public needs to have a fully staffed jail. The public needs people to answer those 911 calls. And, you know, that should be the number one focus of our government.
So was it discussion about service? Or was it discussion
hiring
about people? Was it discussion about the byproduct of these hires?
The discussion had budget related, and they're concerned about next year's budget. If I don't hire these people, then what they're signaling is that maybe those positions are going to be taken away at budget time.
So it won't be frozen.
It'll be removed. What they're signaling right now is that they would need to save money in next year's budget. And so if there's unfilled positions, they may look at those unfilled positions as positions that they can take away in order to balance out the budget. And I'm telling them that right now we're working short on the street, in the jail, in our dispatch center. I need to hire people, because the burnout rate in corrections, in operations, in our emergency communication center is very high right now. We have people working 12-hour days, 5 to 6 days a week. It is going to be impossible to keep that pace. I need to hire people as quick as possible. And what this does here is asking permission from the board is going to delay the process.
And this has nothing to do with the level of compensation.
Has nothing to do with compensation. This is money in my existing budget. Yeah. That's the crazy thing about it, is I'm not asking for more money. I'm asking just permission to hire someone that I already have the money for.
So how did the discussion go?
I'm thankful that that we came to a resolution. Natalie Arroyo and Mike Wilson agreed that maybe we don't fund 35 positions, but maybe we fund 25 positions. And I think that's a valid argument. And because realistically, what can I hire, in the next 4 months, 5 months, you know? And so I agreed to that. I said, we can hire, we're going to aim to hire 12 correctional deputies, 8 deputy sheriffs, and 5 dispatchers in the next 4 months. And, you know, please give me permission to hire at least those amount. And they agreed. And so they voted 4-5. Steve Madrone voted against it, which I still don't understand why. And because he never asked a question after the initial statement of why he doesn't support public safety in that manner. But I'm thankful that Natalie Arroyo, Mike Wilson, and Rex and Michelle did vote for that, and we were able to come to that consensus. And if I need positions other than those, then I have to go to the board to ask permission.
It would be interesting, and I know that a lot of the supervisors will meet with department heads, whether it's annually or biannually or, you know, first time they're elected, that kind of stuff. It's always intriguing for me for just general conversation on the street. People who know how to do, perceptually, my job better than me. Okay. Whether it's programming the radio stations or filling and operating a sheriff's department. To turn the budget around and go, here, tell me where.
It's exactly my point,
and
Ryan.
Just,
yes.
You know, over lunch or whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be confrontational. And just, okay, where? Let me know. You know, what songs would you add? Which ones would you take away? Here's the target. What areas of the sheriff's department do you think that I can get rid of that doesn't endanger public safety?
Right.
I'd like to know.
Exactly. Because I absolutely, and I feel like I've made those opportunities available. And last year we met with Michelle Bushnell and Natalie Arroyo when he talked about budgets, and I explained all of these things to them so they understood the reason why we had to, you know, do the certain things with our budget. But I have to do more education, including with the CAO and the Board of Supervisors, saying where, if you're asking me to cut positions, if you're asking me not to fill these positions, then what services would you like me to cut for the county? Because there are some things that I'm mandated to do. And
yeah, they're the non-negotiables.
Non-negotiables, okay. but they still can underfund me, which I mean have to reallocate resources. So I'm going to take the drug people from Drug Task Force, from the marijuana team, from patrol services to run the jail, to run courts, to make sure that I have plenty of people that are there to do those jobs, which is not what the public wants. The public wants people to be able to respond to 911 calls. And we already have 8 to 10 deputies that are working at any given time for the whole 4,000 square mile county, from Oreck to Garberville, Alder Point to Willow Creek. It's like that's a huge area for 8 to 10 deputies to be able to respond for various incidents. And, you know, unlike Eureka, which could have 4 to 6 for this small area, and I have double that, you know, for the entire county. So,
KINS, news and information time, it's 8:45. We'll be back with more from Billy Hansel.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer. Your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel.
Okay, quick question.
Yeah.
Can I get that song in a ringtone? Is there somewhere I can like pull that out?
I believe you can.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome.
In fact,
might cost you something.
No, I think
it was. Is it up in 8-track?
The cassette's over there somewhere.
Oh, the cassette's right there.
There you go. That's the album, baby.
Okay.
I think.
It's somewhere on there.
There it is. Yeah. Spyro Gyra. There we go. Got it.
By saying cassette, it kind of gives the implication it's from the 80s.
And just so everyone knows, Spyro Gyra, Stories Without Words. Yeah. There you go.
I've got three other albums.
I'm going to go iTunes and figure that out today.
Good. Probably ring only when I give you a hard time, huh?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Ignore that one.
Yes.
So as there are discussions about the department and understaffing or staffing at levels that you don't feel comfortable with, I guess that's both sides of the same sword.
Yeah.
Obviously, the public is aware of that.
Yes.
So not only the confidence stuff, let's kind of put it over to the side that, you know, do we feel safe or not, that kind of thing. But I would think that the bad guys are paying attention to this stuff, too. So the more you say less and less, or the funders are saying less and less, they're going to see windows of opportunity opening up. Am I missing something here?
Nope, you're not. And we had this several years ago when we, you know, prior to Measure Z, we had to cut back and not have staffing in our outstations at nighttime. And the word was out. And crime didn't suddenly go away. It increased in the outstations because they knew there weren't deputy sheriffs.
Or did it shift to that time frame?
There were times burglaries went up. Absolutely. There's things that happened there and left us vulnerable in Willow Creek and Garberville. And then also it shifts, too, that people don't understand. If I only have six deputies or five deputies, that's what we were running before Measure Z, at nighttime, if there's an incident that happened in Willow Creek, then three deputies went to Willow Creek and left McKinleyville and Eureka vulnerable at that point in time. And then someone calls 911. We say, well, we're going to ask CHP, we're going to ask Eureka PD to come to Humboldt Hill, but they may or may not be available. And so that's the scary part about it. We need deputies in all these different areas so they can be responsive to those emergency calls that come in.
Well, isn't that the concept of either the resident deputy or, I guess, the equivalent of a substation?
Yes. And in the past, we've had more resident deputies. Now our resident deputies are essentially focused in Willow Creek area. We have four resident deputies that are over in that area. But the resident deputy in Bridgeville, Shelter Cove, Oreck, even Orleans doesn't necessarily exist anymore because we don't have the staffing to fill those positions.
And that's just having somebody who lives in those areas?
Yes.
It's not a structure?
Nope. It is basically just a 30-minute response time to the main beat area. And so they're able to be, you know, subject to call out after hours. And they focus that area. You know, one area that never gets any kind of patrol coverage is Petrolia and Honeydew. Those people, they don't have a resident deputy, and we have very few calls for service that go out there, and it just takes a while to get out there. So I'm thankful that community still is very tight-knit, that if there is something that happens, they call us immediately, and there's a delayed response, but we get there.
So as you're looking at, I mean, you know, now it's boiling down to a marketing thing for me.
It is.
Okay, so if you've got X number of people in X number of community and you have to lop off two of them, paint the picture. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, and that's...
And I would think if you had an example for each of the supervisorial districts, it might come home.
Well, it does.
A little bit more personal.
It does. Well, Mike Wilson and Natalie Arroyo don't really... I mean, they have... They're around Arcata and Eureka, which is... You know, has
you
their
still
own police
have
force.
Neyland and
yeah,
Maple
but
Creek.
There's very few actual issues that are up there. What affects the most are Michelle Bushnell, Rex Bone, and Steve Madrone. Those areas need the resident deputies. They need those rural deputies, Willow Creek, Garberville, you know, out there doing the jobs. And those will be the first stations that get shut down in a budget issue, budget crisis, or
do you have
crisis.
Historical records to show what it was like that are current enough that are usable? What it was like when those didn't exist?
Yes. But in the 80s, we had a full-on outstation, which had tons of deputies that were out there. And then budget cuts and state funding shifted, and people had to get laid off. And we're thankful for things like Measure Z that allowed us to hire 30-plus deputies that we can actually staff all the outstations. And that's, you know, and that was Measure Z was all about. So,
well... Now that you're awake, I guess the day is set
yes,
for you.
Yes, thank
huh?
you so much. Get my blood pressure up this
there
morning,
we go.
Brian.
All right.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
Community service. It all happens right here every morning. Join us tomorrow morning. We'll have some more of this stuff. See everybody then.